Welcome to The Pen and the Yad. Join Rabbi Michael Siegel from On Shamit Synagogue and author Jonathan Eig as they talk about this week's Torah portion, Vayera. Does the Ark of Justice stop at Sodom and Gomorrah?
So someone once said, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. You ever heard that before?
Oh yeah, I've heard it before because Martin Luther King used to say it a lot, and I believe he was quoting from an abolitionist.
He believed it, I take it.
Yes, but he pointed out that it did not bend necessarily by itself, that some force had to be applied, and that we had a responsibility to use our powers to help bend it. Because if you look at even the course of King's short life, his 39 years, you could argue that it wasn't bending that much, and that every time he bent it a little bit, it bent back. There's a backlash constantly to any signs of progress. We certainly see that happening all around us. So I think that the problem with that construction is that it makes it sound like it happens naturally, and I don't think it necessarily does.
So there has to be human input in order to see the arc of justice actually, the arc lean towards justice.
I believe so.
I'm interested in really just sort of doing the Rashi on that. It's one of those things that, you know, it just chills you to hear it. It's powerful. And you say, yes, but what does it actually mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think the Torah reading for this week, Vayera, actually raises this question, because I think it's going to take us to a different step. It's going to say that sometimes a society is irredeemable. Let's investigate the story. It's a story of Sodom and Gomorrah, that God comes to Abraham and reveals to him that God is going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, that it's going to be completely and utterly destroyed because of the evil of the cities. The Torah doesn't actually define that. The rabbis, of course, will fill in that void. But what God is telling Abraham is that this city deserves destruction. Abraham responds in a way that is just stunning. He says, well, the judge of the whole world not judge justly. And Abraham says, well, I'll tell you what, if I can find 50 people there who are good, will you spare the city? And Abraham then bargains down to 10, just 10 people, 10 people. If I could just get 10.
I guess not. Would you believe one nice puppy?
That's aging you a little bit, right?
Yeah, it's whatever.
Right.
I'll stand up for Maxwell Smart anytime. I don't care. Call me.
Right. Old. Yeah. I'll see your 20. I'm gonna put in 10. But God says, okay, go do it. And the fact is that Abraham cannot find 10 righteous people in Sodom, and the city's destroyed. The city's destroyed. And okay, that's the end of the story. So what we normally talk about, what the rabbis normally focus on, is the fact that challenging God is very Jewish and actually a positive and not a negative. Other religions would see you as a heretic if you doubted or questioned God. But because Jews are in a covenantal relationship, we can question God. We can argue with God. We can be angry about God. And if you look at the book of Psalms, that's exactly what's happening there. This is an unusual approach to religion. Okay. Or that we should question, that we should be involved, and that we are also, you know, engaged in acts of righteousness. That's also something you can say. But you might also argue, and this is not part of the rabbinic universe, at least the normative rabbinic universe, of saying that there are some societies that will collapse upon themselves because they are just that bad. They are evil, and that they will ultimately collapse. Thoughts?
Wow. There's a lot there to talk about. You know, on the one hand, you know, we sort of frame religion as something we need. We need structure. We need rules. We need a sense that we are answerable, or that there is a higher force at work we should be aspiring to. And yet, you know, you're also saying that we should be, or we might be capable of arguing with God, challenging God. So that means that we have the right to suggest that that maybe that higher force is not perfect, or that we can at least be in conversation, in dialogue with that higher force. I don't know where that leaves me. It leaves me a little uncertain about, you know, the parameters of the relationship.
I would approach it a little differently. I think this actually is the proof text for our opening conversation about the arc, that the arc of justice needs human input. Mm-hmm. It does need human input, but that doesn't mean that some things are irredeemable. In other words, the society itself would have to change. This outside force of Abraham just arguing with God and saying this is unjust, God proves to Abraham that this society wasn't worth saving. And I think this is in some ways a warning to Abraham and to his descendants that you too can become irredeemably evil, right? There's no guarantees here. You have to strive to be a moral, ethical society. And when you have challenges, ethical challenges, how do you meet them? So if you dig a little deeper into the Midrash, you'll kind of see where I'm going here. In the Midrash, what they note is that Sodom and Gomorrah are very wealthy places. And this story of destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah happens right after Abraham and Sarah welcome these strangers into their home. They are the paradigm of what we call Hachnas Arachim, of welcoming the guests, welcoming strangers into their home. They open their home. They make a point of caring for others because they see the humanity in every person. That's the standard. So the rabbis then say, well, then what was the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah? They were the opposite. They were inhospitable. They would not allow any, they didn't want to share their wealth. They were very happy to be left alone. So they built very high walls. And when people came, and if someone in Sodom were to open their home to someone else, those people would be ostracized because they were putting everyone else at risk of losing their luxurious surroundings, this very comfortable place. So it was a moral choice that the Sodomites acted on. And I guess I wonder, you know, how would we look at the refugee crisis in America today? How are we balancing that out? Are we welcoming people in? What are we doing with the people who are here? How do we manage this? And this country is in, I think, a chaotic moment where the government isn't sure what to do. There are many people on the right who are saying this is the worst thing you can possibly do. There are people on the left saying we should open the gates and let America be America. And so it's a chaotic moral moment in America that really, I think, the story of Sodom speaks to.
That's helpful. You know, what I hear you saying is that we're in this struggle for between selfishness and selflessness, and that, you know, seeing the humanity in every human means recognizing that those other humans are all equal to you, and that we really struggle with that as individuals and as a society. You know, there's a tendency to, if you have wealth, to hold on to it, if you have power, to hold on to it. And sometimes you're holding on to it at the expense of others. Often you're holding on to it at the expense of others. And we see this in the political world where compromise is almost absurd at this point, right? It's all about me and my party. We see it as individuals when it comes to, you know, refugees that we see when we pass on our way to the grocery store. It's a real struggle. And I feel like, you know, if the moral arc of the universe is to bend toward justice, it has to bend because we see that we're all made in the image of God, and that that's not just a fact, but it's a responsibility.
Okay, except that there are people in our society who are saying, what the heck is going on here? You're not taking care of your own citizens. There are people throughout the United States, here in the city of Chicago, who are suffering inequities. You're not taking care of us, and yet you are putting millions and millions and millions of dollars into taking care of migrants in this country, people from Venezuela, right down the street from the synagogue. There is the Islamic College. There are 1,000 people living in there. And every day there are more busloads. And people are saying, you're going to have to figure this out. But what about us? What about our schools? What about our neighborhoods? What about the crime here? We have a tent city around police stations. There needs to be a clarification of what is the moral arc. It may not be this notion that America can be the home for any person who wants to live here. How do we manage what's possible and still maintain our moral code?
Yeah, and it's human nature to worry first about your own family, your own tribe, your own nation. But I guess that's my question back to you is, how can the Torah help us? You know, we're never going to completely overcome that instinct to worry about our own people first, our own families first. But how can we make progress on the larger scale? How can, you know, we save the whole world if we're only, you know, if we're constantly going to be biased toward protecting our own and saving ourselves?
I think there is a lesson here. It has to do with building walls, but how high do you build them? What is America's responsibility to the larger world? Does America have a responsibility to improve the lives of people in South America or places like Venezuela? Does the United States need to get involved, or can it just build a wall and turn its back and say, we need to take care of ourselves and ourselves alone? Right? This is what we should be doing for Americans, and to hell with everybody else. The reality is that it's not either or, it's either and or. I think it begins with the notion that there is a just path, that not everything is relative, and that we need to err on the side of seeing every human being as someone created in the image of God and build from there. That doesn't mean that every human being has a right to live in America or any other country in the world, but we have to have a system that actually functions. I don't think you can build walls so high that you can't see out, but you build walls high enough to maintain an American society where you can actually take care of the needs of its citizenry while welcoming a percentage of people into this country. I don't have the formula for it. I think that if you don't start with a moral base, then there's no arc of justice.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, and we should also talk about building bridges. But, you know, the thing that Dr. King said about the moral arc of the universe is that when we divide ourselves and we think about others and as enemies, we create kind of a moral rot at the core of our societies, and that fundamentally we can still be proud of who we are and also embrace those others as our brothers.
I think that a story like the story of the Bible, of Sodom and Gomorrah, is a story where we can understand that none of us are all that far from being sodomites. We all want to take care of our own. We have the ability to rationalize, to live in the moral uncertainty and try to make choices, hard choices, but maintain your moral code. Well, that's hard. That's hard work. It's easy to be a sodomite. It's not easy to live the life that Abraham is being commanded to live. And I think that's where we stand today. We have to define who we are, what we are as Americans, and try to live up to our values in a realistic way. And that's hard work. I do believe that we are capable of it. I do think that moral arc is still part of the American experience and should be and must be. And we have a responsibility to engage it.
Well, I certainly agree with that.
If you're agreeing with me, I'm stopping here.
Let's end on an agreeable note, and we'll be back next time.